All right, so now we're going to have our class on the Noron. And I'm still Patty McGlinchey. And I'm still happy to be here. It's not the paycheck that brings me here, folks. It's you. Believe it. All right, you have your objectives. And the class will follow that format there. I'm not going to read them out for you, but there they all are. Okay, so getting to the notes. So as promised, we're going to spend more time on the Noron, the star of the show, supported by all the neuroglia cells. And the very beginning of this handout is actually repetitive. It's the exact same thing I told you before about the Noron, that it's a special cell. It's very special. Now, this specialized cell is the structural and functional basic unit of the nervous system. So I am getting a little bit more in detail here, but this is your structural functional unit, the neuron. The neuroglia cell, what I'm trying to say there is, if you look at the neuron and you dissect out just one neuron, which is impossible to do, but if you did, that's really the structural way that the nervous system's set up, by how the neurons lie, from where to where, and they connect to another one and so forth. Those neuroglia cells, they're in the background, they're supporting, they're structural, but they don't make up what you're looking at when you see a brain and a spinal cord. It's really the neurons that are the key to how it's formed, how it works. It consists, as I said before, of a cell body, and then dendrites and axon, and axon. And we're going to get into exactly what those things are in just a moment. Function-wise, it's a conductor. It conducts information in from the periphery and out to the periphery. So if it's conducting it in, is it afferent or efferent?
Afferent.
All right. Are we there? Everybody? Okay, I'm going to pick on somebody. I'm going to pick on somebody with a similar name. Patty. Who's Patty? Last name. Okay, but mine's first name Patty. Last name Patty. If what would you call it if it's taking information from the central nervous system out to the muscles in the periphery? From central out to periphery. Efferent. All right. See, these, I'm going to try not to embarrass anybody. But even if you get the simple questions wrong, it's not considered embarrassing because, again, with learning, you actually learn more if you get the question wrong in public. You'll never get it wrong again. Okay, so this is the time to do it, not during the test. Okay, great. And the neuroglia, those cells, which we're not going to talk about this class, are those that support, nourish, protect, and maintain homeostasis within the nervous system. What do I mean by maintain homeostasis? Sounds real exciting, doesn't it? Yes.
Balance.
Yes. That's a good way to just sum it up. It keeps the balance in the body, and in this case, the nervous system. So getting rid of the waste, providing the nutrition, keeps that balance, homeostasis. So it kind of takes care of everything, makes it run smoothly. All right. We already talked about this, so this is a little bit of a review, the functional types of neurons. You had the afferent and the efferent, motor and sensory, which one goes to which. You should be able to figure that out by now. But and those are in the peripheral nervous system. But what we didn't do when we charted it in the last class was get into details about the central nervous system. Now we're going to do that. In the central nervous system, you have four different functional neurons. And this is really textbook dependent. Some textbooks only list three, some list four. What they do is they kind of blend the borders. We're going to go with the four because that's the textbook that we're using as our main textbook. And it's the most common way of breaking this down too. Okay? I've actually made sure that I'm not wasting your time. So the first one of those four we're going to look at is the interneuron. Now, the interneurons are pretty small compared to the others. They have short little dendrites and axon, and an axon, which act locally because they're so short. Their little projections coming out are so teeny that they can't extend their information very far. They act locally as far as a neuron goes. Oh, and I forgot. I was going to turn up the volume. Let me get that up there. Ooh, that's a little loud. Okay, does that work? Okay, sorry, the people with the fan weren't hearing me too well. I forgot. Excuse me. So these interneurons, being small as far as their dendrites and their axon, They act locally. They stay where they are as far as processing information. We're in the central nervous system, so that's the main job of the central nervous system, processing information. It's the control center. Now, interneurons are also involved in reflexes within the spinal cord. On Friday, I believe, or I don't know when it's going to be, I think it's Friday, we're having a test, not a test, a class on the reflexes. And I'll talk more and more about interneurons then. But they're involved within the reflexes, and what they do is they bridge the gap between afferent neurons and efferent neurons. So you have an afferent neuron bring sensory information in, touched a hot stove, using that example that we had earlier. The interneuron takes that sensory information, makes an immediate response decision, and sends that to the efferent neuron, which does what usually if you touch a hot stove? You like pull back, you flex away from it. So that interneuron is all the processing that's needed to get that reflex to occur, that little fellow. So that's your interneuron, and you have a picture in your handout. It's the same one on the slide. And let me just explain that picture to you for a minute. I'm going to use the, I don't know if you know all the capabilities of this wonderful podium they've given me. I can draw, and I will draw. Okay, so right here, where I'm drawing a red circle, this is your sensory receptor. Information gets picked up, hot stove. The information travels on the... They're messing with me here. My pen is not working the way it's supposed to. It's traveling on the blue neuron, which is your afferent neuron. And what that is showing here is it's coming into the spinal cord. So we're taking a salami cut of the spinal cord. You get my view here? So you're looking at a cut there. So now, afferent neuron took information in. Interneuron, I'll draw it in blue. Oh, man, this pen is all messed up. I'm drawing about an inch away from where I should be. So if it looks like a kindergartner up here, that's why. So that's your sensory neuron, your interneuron, bridging the gap between the red afferent, and now I'm going to draw a red efferent neuron, which takes the motor response out of the spinal cord and over here to the muscle. So the blue one is the one I'm highlighting today, right now, the interneuron. But you'll see slides or pictures like this as you go through the handouts later, especially when we get into the spinal cord handout. The next of the bunch of central nervous system neuron types is the projection fibers. These neurons are the ones that come from the cerebral cortex. And that's what people always think of when they think of brains, that cerebral lumpy cortex. They start there, the neurons, and they travel down the spinal cord, taking information away from the brain, away from the cerebral cortex. Those are your projection fibers. They project the motor information out, or project information away. We're not getting as detailed as motor right now. The next one is association neurons. Association neurons take information from one gyri to another gyri within the brain. Now, the hardest thing about teaching this is I have to throw terms at you before I actually taught them. You don't even know what a gyri is unless you've had that in a class before. That's those lumps of the brain. So taking this brain here, what you're looking at is mostly cerebral cortex, except for these pale yellow things. They're not cerebral cortex. But all the rest of it up here is. And all these lumps, these big ridges, are called the gyrus. Each one is a gyrus, plural, it's gyri. Okay? So your association neurons are staying on one half of the brain and taking information from one gyrus to another gyrus. The key here is they're not crossing to the other half. They're staying on one side of the brain. The last one of our bunch... The commensural neurons, these take information from one gyri on one hemisphere of the brain, one side, to the corresponding gyrus on the other side, the other hemisphere of the brain. So they're the ones that cross from left side to right side, or whichever way I'm doing it here. Okay, so here's your quiz. I've just split the brain. If I want to get information from one part of this side of the brain, well, let's see, I have to get them right here. Turn around. All right. Now I can't split it. Okay. If I wanted to get information from the right hemisphere, back here in the occipital lobe, which is where your vision pretty much is, if I want to get that information up to the frontal part of the brain, what kind of neuron would I take? This is like the subway system. Which one?
Association.
Good. Okay, so those of you that live inner city, you're going to be good at this. It's like taking buses, right? So you have to take the association. Now if I want to get from the frontal brain on the right side to the frontal brain on the left side, what do I take?
Common serial.
Okay, now we're going to get tricky. Okay, this tells if you really live in the city or not. If I want to get from the occipital lobe on the right side to the frontal lobe on the left side, what do I got to take? All right, what do I have to take first? Okay, well, we could do it that way. If we're going to go association first, I'm going to go association from occipital lobe to where?
Frontal lobe
on the same hemisphere. And then? Common serial to go from frontal lobe on right to frontal lobe on left. Good. And if you wanted to do it the other way, take the common serial first, you'd be going from occipital lobe to occipital lobe. And then you can take the association to the frontal. Okay? Doesn't matter which way you do it. As long as you're not taking association from one hemisphere to the other. Association stays within a hemisphere, common serial crosses. Good. Just dumped my brain here. Alrighty. Brain dump. So what we just looked at are four different types of neurons in the central nervous system. Give me two different types in the peripheral. I know it was a woman's voice. Afferent, efferent. In the peripheral nervous system, we have two types, afferent, efferent. In the central, got interneurons. What's another word for an interneuron? A bridge. You could have told me little guy. A bridge, but they stay local. And then you have the two we just talked about, association and common serial. And then the other one, which goes from cerebral cortex, taking it out?
Projection.
Projects it out. Projects it out. Those are the four. Now what we're going to talk about are some structural diversities within the neurons. Not all neurons look the same. As you can see here, we got three different types up here on the screen. The first one is a multipolar neuron. This is the one that I think is the poster child for the neurons. You always see multipolar. They're the famous ones. Those are the ones that have a bulging cell body. And off that bulging cell body, they have one long projection. That's an axon. And then a whole bunch of shorter ones. And those are dendrites. So multipolar, by definition, has one axon and several dendrites. The multi comes from the dendrite end of it. The next one over, on the slide, it's calling it pseudo-unipolar. On my handout, actually go down to C, skip B for the moment and go to C, we're just going to call it unipolar. Now, this is the funky one, okay, this one. You have the bulging cell body part of the neuron, but then you have this stalk. And off of the stalk comes two projections, one that is axon-like and one that is dendrite-like, as far as how they function. The interesting thing is they're really both axons. Okay, if you look at the like microanatomy of it, they really are axons, but because they function differently, one is dendrite-like, the other is axon-like. Now, the one that is dendrite-like is called the peripheral branch. The one that is axon-like is called the central branch. So that's kind of the unique one. It has a little bit of quirks to it. And this one we're going to talk about a lot because this is your main afferent neuron. An afferent, let me pull a name out. Let's see. Jellison. And I don't have ranks, so I just have names. Jellison. Where's a Jellison? Okay. If it's your main afferent neuron, is it going to be sensory or motor in function? Bingo. Have a seat. All right. So that's your sensory, main sensory organ, that unipolar, the one with the stalk. Then the last one up on the slide, but the B on your handout, is the bipolar neuron. Doesn't mean it goes from manic to depressive. What it means is it's dendrite and an axon, two processes coming off of that central cell body. We are not going to talk much about the bipolar because those are used in special senses, and in physical therapy we don't do a lot with special senses, vision and smelling. But just to know there are bipolar, that's about all we're really going to get into it. We're going to spend most of our time looking at the neurons that are either unipolar or multipolar. Any questions on those fellows? They're all fellows. Okay. I just have some more slides kind of looking at the same thing. So here's some more pictures of the multipolar. You find this a lot in the central nervous system, brain and spinal cord. We're going to see it a lot. The bipolar again, this is the one you find in your special senses. We're not going to see this one a lot. And then the unipolar. And this one is your one that's unique in that it's really just an axon, but part of it acts like a dendrite, part of it acts like an axon, and you find this with your afferent neurons. Okay, now we get into the real fun part. We're going to look at a typical neuron. We're not going to worry about those structural diversities, whether it's multipolar, bipolar, or unipolar. What we're going to look at now is the cell body, the dendrite, and the axon. And for all those different functional types we just talked, I mean structural types we just talked about, they're the same. So when I talk about an axon, it's pretty much the same for all the ones we just looked at, all those different types. So we'll start out looking at the cell body. The cell body is the main portion of the cell containing all those organelles, the nucleus, the nucleolus, everything you learned in the cells and tissue class about a cell. It's pretty much all right there in the cell body. So therefore, function-wise, the cell body is integral in the development of the cell, the metabolism, the growth. And if you took a neuron and destroyed the cell body, you've destroyed the neuron. I like to think of lizards. Again, I grew up with brothers. I had no sisters, all brothers. So you take a lizard, right? You squish the tummy of the lizard, what happens to it? It's dead. Okay? Keep that in mind as we move on to the next thing here. Here, I know, isn't that beautiful? This is probably one of the most classic pictures of a neuron out there. And I believe you have this in your handout. Yes, you do. So looking at this picture, it's pretty obvious to tell where the cell body is. The big bulging thing. What's the big black thing in the middle of the big bulging area? All right, good. That's your nucleus. And within there, you could find the nucleolus if you had a better copy of it. I don't know. Yeah, you'd need a better copy of it probably. But you see all those other little things. You'll see the classic mitochondria. And that's always your, I can draw one for you here. Your circle with the squigglies in the middle. That's your mitochondria. That's floating around here. And there are other organelles in there as well. Okay, so on to the next part, the dendrite. These are little extensions coming off of the cell body. And I want to stress the word extensions. It's not like they're appendages, you know, stuck onto it. They actually are extensions. So the fluid within the dendrite is the same as the fluid within the cell body. Okay, they're continuous. They're not two different structures attached together. Continuous. These extensions become very highly branched. You have diagrams here. You don't have real pictures. If you did, you'd see the immense amount of branching that occurs as these dendrites continue out, just like the root structure of a plant. Okay? Very highly branched. And they conduct the impulses of the neuron towards the cell body. So functionally, that's the most important thing about a dendrite. They bring the impulse towards the cell body. They're the collectors of the information. At the very tips of their periphery, the very tips of their branches, is where they would have a receptor site if they were an afferent neuron lying in the periphery. I guess that's kind of redundant because afferent neurons are always in the periphery. But if they're an afferent neuron, the very tips of those dendrites is going to have receptors to pick up maybe touch or temperature, something. And they're going to take that information in towards the cell body. My body's the cell body now. Okay, so it brings it in. Get that in there, in here. Get that in your brain. Dendrites bring the information in. Now remember, there is that one funky neuron, the unipolar. The unipolar one is the one with the stalk and then has the two branches off it. Structurally, they're both axons, but one of those branches, the peripheral branch, acts like a dendrite. So how's it going to bring the impulse? Away or towards the cell body? Towards the cell body. All righty. And then we have the axon. The axon, singular. Dendrites, you can have more than one if it's multipolar. But axons, there's always just one. Now, the axon is also a cytoplasmic extension, so it's the same idea. It just extends off of that cell body, and functionally what it's doing is taking the impulse away from the cell body. Dendrite brings it into the cell body. Axon takes it away from the cell body. They have functional differences, and that's very important, very key. I'm going to get into more detail about the axon because there's a lot to understand about it so that we can understand how a neuron works. The dendrites we don't need to know much more about, but axons we do. So first of all, surrounding the axon is a very specialized cell membrane. I mean, surrounding a cell always is a cell membrane. And they're always special. But around the axon, it's even more special. And that more special cell membrane is called an axolemma. Throwing terms out here. When you see lemma, think cell membrane. Axo, axon, lemma. Axon, cell membrane. You're going to hear about another lemma later on. Now, this axolemma is semi-permeable. What that means is some things can get through and some things can't. It really depends on the state of the axon. And our last class today, membrane excitability, is going to talk all about that. What allows things to get in and what doesn't. So I'll leave that exciting part for the end of the day. Another thing about the axon is it may have myelin or it may not. Myelin, I brought that up already. Think back, short-term memory. Myelin, where did I hear that? Oh, there were two cells that secreted myelin. Schwann cell was one of them, and the other? The oligodendrocyte, the big O. Okay, oligodendrocyte and Schwann cell. They both produce the myelin by wrapping around the neuron. Now, if axons are the part of the neuron that is myelinated, and tells you that the Schwann cells and the oligodendrites don't just wrap around the neuron. Specifically, they wrap around the axon of the neuron. But they don't always. Some axons don't have myelin, and some do. So you can have a myelinated axon or a non-myelinated axon. Ah, there's just so much to learn today. And we're going to talk more about myelin in just a moment, but first, let me continue on with our general axon. So you have your axon coming out, maybe myelinated, maybe not. At some point, it's going to branch, and those branches are called collaterals, axon collaterals. And those branches are going to branch and branch and branch until they finally get to the tips, the ends of the axons, where it terminates. And therefore, they're called axon terminals. That's the very tip, the very end of the axon. Axon terminals. At the axon terminal, there's a little swelling. Because there's stuff in there. So to hold the stuff, it has to swell just a little bit. And it's not like huge. We're talking very microscopic here. But that little bit of swelling at the axon terminal is sometimes called a bulb. So you might hear the synaptic end bulb, you might hear axon terminal. There's a lot of terms for this. I'm going to be throwing one out later called the presynaptic terminal, but for right now, What you need to know is at this swelling, there's little vesicles, little containers of chemicals. Those vesicles are called synaptic vesicles. And you'll get used to that word synapse. Synapse is a word meaning junction. It's where one neuron meets another cell. Maybe a neuron, maybe a muscle, maybe a gland. But synaptic vesicles are little containers. And within those little containers, they have chemicals. And the chemicals are called neurotransmitters. And without them, you die. Just wanted to get your attention. It's true. But neurotransmitters are little chemicals within your body. You may have heard of dopamine, serotonin, acetylcholine, norepinephrine. Those are neurotransmitters. Good stuff. histamine. That's another one, too. So I have a whole laundry list of neurotransmitters down there. They're essential because those vesicles at some point are going to open up, release the neurotransmitter out of the neuron, and that's what's going to take the message of that neuron to the next cell, cause a muscle to contract, or cause a gland to secrete, or cause another neuron to get the message to send the message on to the next thing. So neurotransmitters are very, very important. At this point, I don't need you to memorize all those neurotransmitters. You, by the end of this program, you're going to know them, but not this class, okay? Not this very one. Now, the last thing I have listed down there that is contained within the axon terminals, you have the synaptic vesicles with their neurotransmitters, but you also have mitochondria in those axon terminals, in that swelled area. Now, if you have mitochondria, what does that mean? You need energy. Yeah, they're the powerhouse, right? Powerhouse of the cell. So if we got mitochondria, that means there's going to be a need for energy at that area. And it makes sense. Synaptic vesicles have to open up. They need energy to do that. And in fact, they don't just need energy to open up. They also migrate to the very edge of the cell membrane and then open up. That whole process takes energy, and the mitochondria supply it. All right. So I think we can look at a picture, and then we have a fun little project coming up. But if you look at the picture here, you're looking at two cells, two neurons. Can you tell the two neurons? Can you differentiate the two of them there? Yeah? Okay, I'm going to get my pen and try to make this work. So we have one neuron here, and it kind of stops right around here. The tips of that neuron, I'm going to switch to blue. The tips, this would be your axon here. What is it called when it starts branching? Collaterals. And then when it gets to the very tip? Terminal. So it would be at that very tip. Oh, this is so hard to draw. Very tip that it swells. I blew it up there. It swells. And within that swelling, what structure would be located? There's two structures. Give me one of them. Synaptic vesicle, and I have heard over here mitochondria. Those are two structures that are in there. There's more, but that's the only two I'm telling you about. Within the synaptic vesicle, what do you find? Neurotransmitters, little chemicals. Okay, good, and we'll learn more about that. And hang on a second. I didn't want to go into myelin just yet. What we're going to do now is something that's just a little bizarre to do for young adults. And older adults. we're going to play with Play-Doh. I know it sounds crazy, but it works. Another form of learning, getting in there and touching. Okay? You're just going to get a little container of Play-Doh. Your job is to create a neuron. I don't care if it's multipolar, unipolar, or bipolar, but I want a neuron. I want you to be able to identify the axon and the dendrites or dendrite. And we're going to go from there with it. So I don't want you to take too long in creating this. It doesn't have to be a masterpiece, but it has to be identifiable. All right? By me. Okay, so okay, now what we're going to talk about is the myelin. What part of the neuron has myelin on it, if it's going to have myelin? Axon. All right, I love it. Short-term memory is working. So we're going to talk about myelin as it wraps around an axon, what it does, and what names are associated with that myelin. And that will help us understand our next class, which is going to talk about specifically how an axon transmits those conduction, those impulses. I'm trying to give you commercials for the next class so you stick around. I know you have a choice, and you chose to be here today. All right, so with myelin, it's produced by two different cells. These are neuroglia cells. Without looking at the board, everyone close your eyes. All right, I'm going to call out a name. Wilder, I like that name. Wilder, where are you? Wilder. Okay, don't look at the board. Give me one of the cells that produces myelin. Schwann cell, you got to say it with love. It's the Schwann cell. It produces myelin in the peripheral nervous system. So then rushing, where does the central nervous system get its myelin from? Where's the rushing? Oh, well, how about King? Okay. Oh, don't help him. The cell that produces myelin in the central nervous system. You said it, oligodendrocyte. Oligodendrocyte. Those are the two cells that produce myelin, one central, one peripheral. The myelin sheath is the extensions of those cells as they come out and wrap around the neural process, the axon. It wraps around it. As it wraps, it gets really tight, folks. I mean, it wraps. And if you can imagine, even though it's an extension of the oligodendrocyte and an extension of the Schwann cell, it has some cytoplasm in it. But as it wraps, it squeezes all that cytoplasm out. Not out of the cell, but out towards the cell body of the oligodendrocyte and the Schwann cell, so that what you're getting is almost cell membrane wrapped around cell membrane around that axon. It produces that outer, that sheath, and the very outer portion of that wrapping is called the neurolemmal sheath in the peripheral nervous system, not in the central nervous system. You see, they are two different cells, oligodendrocyte and Schwann cell. So when they produce the myelin, it's not 100% the same. In the peripheral nervous system, we're going to call that outer portion of the myelin the neurolemma sheath. Where did you hear lemmal before, lemma? I said it lima, though. But it's spelled the same. I might try to trick you that way. Axolema. Okay, axolema. And that was the name of the cell membrane surrounding the axon. Now we got the neurolemmal sheath. We're talking about that outer portion of the myelin. Lots of names in there. Now, why did I even bring it up? Is it important? It is. And the reason it's important, it's only in the peripheral nervous system. It's involved in allowing neurons to regrow. Let's go back to my lizard example. You step on a lizard at the body, the stomach. Dead lizard. Pull the tail off. It grows back. Okay, pretty cool. You've all probably done it. You know, it's just part of growing up. With a peripheral nerve, you pull the axon off, and it grows back. But with a central nerve, you pull the axon off, and it don't grow back. All right, that's why spinal cord injuries remain spinal cord injuries. It doesn't grow back. So this neurolemmal sheath is one of the key things to allow that axon to bud, to grow back, very similar to how a lizard's tail grows back. That's why I bring it up. And we'll talk more about this when we get into peripheral nerve injuries later in the week. So what does myelin do in general? Besides having some role in helping heal, which is kind of the minor thing here, what it really does, function-wise, is it speeds up that transmission of the axon. So the impulse, how does it come towards the cell body? What does it take to come to the cell body? Not the axon, but the dendrite. Impulse comes towards the cell body. To come away from the cell body, it takes the axon. If you have myelin wrapped around that axon, the speed that it takes once it gets to the axon is extremely faster. Extremely. So that insulating effect of the myelin allows that impulse to travel much, much faster. So what kind of neurons do you think get myelinated? All right, we got a lot of ideas out there. We'll see. We'll get to that. All right, this is what it looks like getting wrapped around. This gives you kind of a cross-section so you can see what I mean by it. Wrap, wrap, wraps, and in doing so, it squeezes the cytoplasm in such a way that the wrappings are just really tight cell membrane wrappings. That's what myelin is. The outer part is called the neurolemmal sheath in the peripheral nervous system. All right, now white and gray matter. Myelin has a lot to do with the terms white matter and gray matter. You may have heard that before. Really, what white and gray matter is referring to is the color of the neurotissue. Does it have a white glistening color when you cut it, when you look at it, or does it have a gray dingy kind of color? Well, myelin gives it that white glistening color. So what's myelinated? What part of the neuron? No. What process of the neuron? Okay, the axon's myelinated. So if you see a lot of white glistening neurotissue, what do you think you're looking at? The axons. What part of the cell does not get myelinated? The dendrite and cell body. Now, dendrites tend to be short and stubby. Okay? So they stick close to the cell body. So if you see a lot of gray matter, meaning it has that dingy kind of appearance, you're looking at cell bodies. So even though it has to do with myelin, when they refer to white matter and gray matter, what they're really referring to is axons and cell bodies, / dendrites, but cell bodies. And when you look at the brain, as I break my brain here, when you get a brain and you pull it apart, and we will, when we teach the brain class, I will bring a brain down for you to see, a real cadaver brain. But you'll see on a real slide, well, I don't know why I even showed you this, it's up here in the picture. You'll see areas of the brain that have a very white cross-section, a white coloring to them. What that's telling you is that portion of the brain is made up of almost completely axons. And the parts that are darker brownish are made up almost completely of cell bodies. So looking at that brain there, what you're looking at is a cut like this. So you just cut off the very front of my brain. You see right here in the middle section a lot of white. What's going on? Okay, I'm back. What it's doing, you have got a lot of axons there taking information from one hemisphere of the brain to the other hemisphere of the brain. What kind of neurons are those that goes from one hemisphere to the other? Oh, who said that? Points, commensural neurons. And the neat thing is that actual structure, that's all it does. It has axons going from one side to the other side, back and forth, and it's called the corpus callosum, which is good because it begins with a C, corpus callosum, commensural neurons. I like things like that. It makes it easier for me to study, especially because by the end of this class, not today's class, but neuro, you're going to have to know corpus callosum and a bunch of other things. So anytime you see white, think of myelinated axons. Anytime you see gray, you're thinking of the cell bodies. Now, what about those axons that don't have myelin? They're going to look white only because they travel by the axons that do. And because they travel by the axons that have myelin, it gives that general gross appearance of being white matter. The ones that don't have myelin are actually very small. And so they really don't give off a whole lot of gray compared to the white next to them. Okay, so anytime you see white, think axons. Anytime you see gray, think cell bodies. Okay. Break-wise, I forget when we did the last one, but I think we're about due. Okay, we've gone an hour. So let me just see here. Okay. Let me just finish off the myelin section, and then we'll break. So hang in there with me. The last thing on this myelin section is the node of Ranvier. French. Get a little French in here. Node of Ranvier. It's just named after Ranvier, some French dude who found these nodes. What it is a gap in the myelin along the axon. So if you look at this picture up here, the blue thing is your axon. The yellow is the myelin. And you can see how it only covers a certain portion of the axon, and then there's a gap, and then you have another portion of myelin and a gap and another portion of myelin. It's actually well planned out, those gaps, those nodes of Ranvier. In the next class, when we talk about how an action potential, how the impulse gets down a neuron, you'll see how those nodes of Ranvier function to increase the speed of the impulse, to make the myelin work. Okay, for now, all I want you to do is to know nodes of Ranvier. You got that? Your little French word today? Everyone say it. I just love how it sounds. So the impulse that runs down the axon is essentially going to hop from one node to the other node. Hop, 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 all the way down. Instead of going down the entire axon, 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 it goes hop, 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 much faster because of the hop. And we'll get into that more later today. So just another picture looking at myelin. The top picture looks at a cross section. The middle white line is your axon. The myelin is the black part surrounding it, and you can see the nodes of Ranvier. That's where it divots in. I'm afraid you'd use this. I'm getting better at it, though. Not really. That would be your node of Ranvier. The middle pictures here show, again, that wrapping effect of the myelin. And the middle one is also showing you Schwann cells, how they wrap. This one down here that looks kind of weird is showing you how the myelin wraps around with the oligodendrocytes. So I told you it's not the same myelin from Schwann cell to oligodendrocyte. They're a little different, but we're not going to get into all the particularities of it, okay? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about having to identify it on the picture. So any questions here? All right, now I know, you know, some people know exactly what they want to do on break. If you don't know what... Okay, let's get back into the neuron now. So we just talked about myelin. I noticed a couple myelinated axons out there. Let me pick on a name here, just pull a name out of the group. Man, with two N's. Okay, what are the segments or the spots called where there's no myelin in a myelinated axon? French, think French. Nodes of Ranvier. Yeah, it looks like Ranvier, but no, it's Ranvier. All right, nodes of Ranvier, good. And let me get my volume back up again. All right. So if you look, we're really almost done this handout. There's not a whole lot more on here. And that's one of the things I like about these early neuro classes is that we do have time for questions. So please, if you have them or if you need to hear something again after I get done this section, bring it up. So we've already played with Play-Doh. Now we're going to get on to the next main section of this handout, talking about a synapse. You've heard the word synapse already when I talked about those containers that hold neurotransmitters. Those are called... synaptic vesicles. Vesicle is a term for a container, a vesicle. So synaptic vesicles. Now I'm going to talk about a synapse itself, just a synapse, but somehow that synaptic vesicle is going to be a part of this. What a synapse is a junction between two cells. And in this case, what we're looking at specifically is the axon terminal being one cell, and the other cell being either a muscle, a gland, or another neuron. Choice of three. That's what a synapse occurs between. And if you're looking at another neuron, you can break it down even more because you can have a synapse with any of the three main parts of a neuron. That would be a dendrite, a cell body, or an axon. So look down at your neuron. And imagine your neighbor's neuron migrating over towards yours. There can be a synapse between your neuron and theirs, and that synapse will be with an axon terminal That has to happen. It has to come from the axon terminal. But the other neuron, it could be synapsing onto the dendrite, the cell body, or the axon. Let's look at it more specifically here. All right, so this is the site where that transmission of the impulse goes from one cell to the next cell. It's quite fascinating. All right, we got different components. You have the postsynaptic terminal, the presynaptic terminal, the synaptic cleft, the synaptic vesicle, which you've already talked about, and the mitochondria, which we've already know basically what that is. But let's put the whole story together. And we're going to start with the presynaptic terminal. We've already given this another name, and you don't need to throw anything at me. I know it's frustrating when one thing has two names. But I've called it before an axon terminal. Axon terminal swell. They got the synaptic vesicles in them. They got mitochondria in them. But when we're looking at it in the perspective of looking at the synapse, now we're going to call it a presynaptic terminal. Same exact structure, different name, because now what I'm looking at is the synapse. That's what I want to talk about. So I'm going to call it the presynaptic terminal. Same thing, though. Look at this picture here. Lovely picture. This is one of the testable pictures, so you will see this again, and you have it in your handout, probably another page forward. Looking at this picture, the presynaptic terminal is the part that I'm outlining in blue right now. It's the big bulge coming down. I'm not going to outline the whole thing because it's just way beyond my motor skills right now. But that's your presynaptic terminal. Look at what's inside of it. Mitochondria are very obvious. The big guys with the squiggles in them. Mitochondria, powerhouse of the cell, produces the energy. Another word for energy is ATP, and I don't see it. We have it later in the next class, but we'll get into that later. So energy, produces the energy, the mitochondria. The other thing in that picture are the dots. Those dots symbolize the synaptic vesicles, the little containers. And what's inside of those little containers? Neurotransmitters, chemicals. This is your presynaptic terminal. It says somewhere in all those words that it is bulb-like, and because of that, sometimes this is called the synaptic end bulb. I'm going to use presynaptic terminal exclusively, but if you go reading the internet and other textbooks, if you want to augment your information on this, you might see it called synaptic end bulb. Just another term for the exact same thing. All right, looking at the second big structure involved in a synapse, that would be the other cell. So we had the axon terminal, which we're now looking at specifically, the presynaptic terminal. That's one cell. Well, this impulse has to jump from one cell to another, so we need a second cell. The second cell, we're going to look at the specific portion that's involved in the synapse, and that's the postsynaptic terminal. So this is where the neurotransmitter goes. It leaves the synaptic vesicle, and it goes to the postsynaptic terminal to get that cell excited. And that's the term for it. I'm not just making that up. It excites the next cell. So it receives the impulse. The postsynaptic terminal receives it in. So in this picture, I'm going to try to outline it in blue. Here we go. What I did in blue is your postsynaptic terminal. The cell receiving the impulse. This could be a dendrite of another neuron. It could be a cell body of another neuron. It could be an axon of another neuron. It could be a muscle cell, or it could be a gland. Any of the above. And on that postsynaptic terminal, you see those black dots? I'm going to try to do them in red if I can. Okay, these little dots here, they are symbolizing receptor sites. And what they are specific for is that neurotransmitter. Let me continue explaining everything, and then I'll tell the whole story. The synaptic cleft is the name of the space in between the two cells. So in between presynaptic terminal and postsynaptic terminal, that little bit of space there, and we're talking microscopic little bit of space, is your synaptic cleft. So that's what the neurotransmitter has to travel through to get from one cell to the other. It has to cross that space. The synaptic cleft. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going to get there. Don't worry about what he said if you didn't hear him. Synaptic vesicles, we already identified. Little containers carry neurotransmitters, contain neurotransmitters, and they'll release it into the synaptic cleft when it's time. And then the last thing on your list of main components of a synapse is the mitochondria. And that's what produces all the energy to allow that synaptic vesicle to move to the edge of the cell membrane, open up, and release the neurotransmitter. So energy is vital. Okay, before I explain the next slide, let me go back and tell the story about how this all occurs. So just, you know, get the images going in your mind. An impulse comes in a dendrite, goes through the cell body of a neuron, and then comes down the axon. If it's myelinated, what is it going to do? Hop, hop, hop. Nodiron VA to nodiron VA. Goes down the axon collaterals to get to the very tip of the axon terminal. It's going to synapse, meaning it's going to do a junction to the next cell. So looking specifically at that synapse, we're looking at the presynaptic terminal here. There's synaptic vesicles and mitochondria within there. Within the synaptic vesicles is neurotransmitter. Once the impulse gets to that presynaptic terminal, the mitochondria will release the energy to allow the synaptic vesicles to migrate down to the very edge of the cell membrane, open up, release the neurotransmitter into the synaptic cleft. Neurotransmitter just floats. I mean, it's a very small synaptic cleft. We're talking about a really small space. It floats out into that cleft, that space, finds the receptor sites on the postsynaptic membrane, the other cell. The receptor sites, once they come in contact with that neurotransmitter, cause the next cell to either send an impulse if it's a neuron, or to contract if it's a muscle or a gland. That's all. Can you say all that? I want you to be able to say all that, right? So that's the story of a synapse, how it gets from one cell to another cell, the nerve impulse, causing the nerve impulse to travel in the next cell if it's a neuron, or causing it to contract if it's a muscle or a gland. It's simple, right? Yeah, no problem. All right. Now, I did say that that second cell can be what? A neuron or a muscle or a gland. And if it's a neuron, it could be any three parts of the neuron. So if you look at this list here, these are all the different types of synapses you can have depending on what the second cell is and where the synapse occurs on the second cell. So if it's going to occur on a dendrite, then it's called an axodendritic synapse, meaning the axon terminal from the first cell synapses onto the dendrite of the second cell, axodendritic. If it's going to synapse onto the cell body of a neuron of the second cell, then it's called axosomatic, not axocellbodyic. All right, axosomatic. Soma is a term for cell body, for cell. So axosomatic, meaning it goes from axon terminal to cell body. If it's axoaxonic, you know what it is. Axon to axon, axon terminal to axon. If it's neuromuscular, now we're changing it. We don't call it axomuscular. Now it's neuromuscular. That means it's a neuron, axon terminal of the neuron, synapsing onto a muscle cell. And therefore, if it's neuroglandular, neuron to gland. All right. It's nice when there are some things that are, you know, relatively easy. Great. So what you could do is take your neuron, if it's mobile, some of you don't have mobile neurons, I know that, and create a synapse. Come on, just do it real quick. Move a neuron, create a synapse, decide if you want it to be axoaxonic, axodendrotic, axosomatic, neuromuscular, or neuroglandular. I guess it can't be neuromuscular since no one created a muscle cell. Can't be neuroglandular either, so we're going to have to do one of the top three. And we'll continue on. Yeah, I think we've ruined some nerves here. I'm enjoying watching the nerve up here migrate. It's it really resembles like some sort of space creature attacking the other. There's one more thing we need to talk about. And that is receptors. Where on a neuron would you have receptors? Receptors, like, tell you about the external or internal environment. So, yes, on the dendrite. In fact, it would be the very tip of the dendrite is where the receptors would be located. Remember, your dendrite functions in bringing the impulse towards the cell body. Axon does what? Takes it away from the cell body. So the dendrite's bringing it towards. So because of that, the dendrite tips are where those receptors would be located if it has receptors. Not all neurons have receptors. Would an interneuron in the brain need receptors? No. Because all an interneuron does is take the impulse from one neuron and transfer it to another neuron. It doesn't need receptors. It essentially has postsynaptic membrane picking up a synapse, picking up the neurotransmitter from one neuron, taking that impulse to the next neuron. How about an afferent neuron in the peripheral nervous system? Would that need a receptor? Or should it be an efferent neuron? How many say A? How many say E? How many have no idea? All right, then we need to figure this out. What I'm wondering is which of the two neurons, A or E, needs to have receptors to pick up information from the periphery, be it external or internal? Oh, now we're getting more A. Why A? Because it's sensory. Good. Afferents are sensory. Efferents are motor. So the tips of the efferents, they don't need any receptors. Okay? It's the afferents. All right, so getting back to this. We're on the dendrites. The very tip, the distal end of a dendrite, is where the receptors are located, in the peripheral afferent neurons. Now, they're located all throughout the body. And again, I want to stress it's internal and external. So we're not just talking about the receptors in your skin. There are receptors within your guts, within your heart, all over the place. They send this information in towards the central nervous system. What two structures make up the central nervous system? All righty, I love it. And they convert that stimulus that's on the actual receptor into a nerve impulse, which comes in towards the cell body, and then axon takes it away, a nerve impulse. So something happens at that receptor to convert it from maybe mechanical pressure or chemical pressure, like within your stomach, to turn it into an electrical impulse that travels down the neuron. We're not going to get into that physiology. We're just going to know something miraculous happens, all right, and transfers it. This is what we do need to know, though, some of the receptors. Now, the type of receptors we're going to be looking at are somatic sensory receptors. You've heard the word somatic before. We're looking at somatic versus autonomic. What did I say somatic was back then? Voluntary. Okay. I'm kind of like changing it now. Somatic, we're talking about that non-internal, non-autonomic type sensory. It's still the same sort of thing. Those somatic nervous system goes to the muscles that you can voluntarily move. The somatic sensory is from the same location. We're talking out here in the periphery of the skin, bringing the sensory in. So we're talking about all those things your skin receptors bring in. What we're not talking about are the chemoreceptors and the electromagnetic receptors within the body. We're sticking to just those mechanical ones. All right, so we got this long laundry list to look at here. Okay, and I have to tell you, I hate telling people what's on the test, but I'm sick of people missing these questions. I'm going to ask you a question on the receptors, so don't forget to study them, okay? I don't know why people always blow off receptors, but there will be one on there, so learn these guys. The first one are the free nerve endings. They look like tree branches. They have that root-like look, and you can find them. It's this one actually on the picture here, and this is the same picture that you have in the handout. They actually call it a bare nerve ending. I'm calling it a free. That's the more common way to refer to it. I really like this diagram, which is why I put it in, but it used a different term. So down here where it says bare on your diagram, go ahead and cross that out. I just circled it in red. Go ahead and cross that out and put free. Free nerve endings. And if you follow the line over, you'll see that it kind of just has like a little branch, a little twig-looking ending to it. This receptor is very, very important. It picks up pain, temperature, and crude touch. Crude touch is a non-discriminatory touch. Like you can feel pressure, you can feel touch, but you wouldn't be able to tell what it is. You just know there's touch. So pain, temperature, and crude touch. Would you like to have your free nerve endings not working? Might be kind of good because you won't feel pain. But pain is a defense, right? It tells you to move. Okay, so yeah, free nerve endings. The second one down is Merkel's tactile disc. Merkel, I think of tickle Merkel, tickle Merkel. They kind of go together somehow. Those words have that similar sound to them. This is the light tickly touch receptors. It picks up that tickly touch. Do you ever like get, you know, you kind of get freaked out sometimes when people touch your real leg, like that. That's the type of touch. It's that light, tickly touch is what Merkel's tactile disc are receptors for. These receptors are very specific. They only pick up certain things. You can find that on your chart, too, and look over and see what it looks like. It also has a branching look to it, but the ends of it are swelled up. They're like little discs, which is why it's called Merkel's tactile disc. The ends have a little disc appearance to them. The next one down is Meisser's corpuscles. I know it's kind of a weird word, that corpuscle name. It's the reason it has that name to it is because if you look at this receptor, it looks like a ball at the end. That's the corpuscle type receptor. So the Meisser's corpuscles is your discriminative touch. I know on the slide it says simple, disregard, that's like, I forgot to update that. Discriminative is how I want you to remember it. So this is when you put your hand in your backpack and you're trying to find your gum, you know, and you're trying to do it really quiet. You don't want to look, you just want to do it with your hand. You're using your discriminative touch, your Meisser's corp muscles. Different receptor from the others. The next one, the Pacinian corp muscle, because of the name, you know it's going to have that swelling to it. This is your pressure receptor. This is the one that tells you to, you know, shift your weight on your butt. You've been sitting too hard on your ischial tuberosity or something. It picks up that sensation of pressure. Now look over at your diagram. Find that Pacinian corp muscle. It's a big fella. It's down at the bottom. Compared to the others, it's really deep. Does it make sense that it's a pressure receptor versus the others that we've talked about? Pain and temperature, that needs to be superficial, right? Discriminative touch, that needs to be superficial. Light touch, that needs to be superficial too. So that they make sense that way. Now what we've talked about are all the ones in the skin. And they're the only ones in the skin we're going to talk about. I know your diagram has at least one more. We're not going to get into all of them, just those. Clinically, we test these. So when we get into the portion of the class where we do clinical assessments and we're looking at the nervous system, we'll do a test. The most common that we do is the light touch test. What receptor are we looking at when we do a light touch test? I heard a couple of them. Merkel's. That's the one I wanted to hear. Merkel's tactile disc. So when I teach that class and I get kind of neurotic because you're doing light touch like this, why would I be upset? Yeah. What are you stimulating when you go like this? Like everything? Okay. You're getting that Pacinian core muscle. You got pressure. You're getting a cruder touch, which would be your free nerve endings. You're getting the discriminative and the light. You're getting everything. We want to test it to be really, we want this neuro screen to be very specific. So if we're doing light touch, we want light touch. Very light. There's a test you can do for discrimination. You have two little prongs and one little prong. You have the patient close their eyes, and you touch them with either the two or the one. And you want them to tell you, is it one or, you know, you ask them to say, is that one or two? Well, when they're really close together, two prongs feel like one. So we're trying to figure out what's the closest we can get them where they still feel like two. What are we testing then? Meissner's, corpuscles, we're testing discriminating touch. All right, so we also have one with a safety pin, or not even a safety pin, it's actually a disposable neurological pin, safety pin or pin. We use that, we're testing pain. So we're going to be looking at how to test these receptors, and we want to make sure that all we're testing is what we're testing. But there's two more on the list. I'm not done, am I? The last two actually are muscle receptors. They're not in your skin, they're in your muscle. And that is your Golgi tendon organ and your muscle spindle. Now these two are very easily mixed up because they're kind of similar in how they pick up sensations, but not really. There's a distinction between them. You see, the Golgi tendon organ picks up tension in the muscle. And you have tension when you overstretch. And what it does is it stops the muscle from contracting. It saves the muscle from being torn. You also have tension when you overcontract, hold a contraction for too long. So anytime there's extreme tension, the Golgi tendon organ, that receptor, picks it up and tells the brain, and the brain's response is to relax the muscle. We're going to use this when we try to stretch out a muscle. And you may see it if you do any athletic training or you watch the Spurs warm up. They use this principle. They'll cause tension in a muscle to cause the muscle to reflexively relax, and then they stretch the muscle during that relaxation phase. So we're going to be using the Golgi tendon organ. The last one, the muscle spindle, it's a receptor for a stretch of a muscle. Now, I'm not talking about a stretch that causes tension, an overstretch. I'm talking about a quick stretch. In fact, I'm trying to stimulate here, it's when you give that little knock of a hammer on the muscle. And it's actually on the tendon that it's usually put on. So we're talking about, all of you had it during your clinical examination getting into the military, when they hit you with the reflex hammer. They're putting a very quick stretch onto your muscle. And that quick stretch stimulates the muscle spindle and causes the muscle to contract. So these two receptors, I have pictures of them, but you're not going to have to identify them, nor the skin receptors, by picture. What I want you to know is their function. And with the two of them here, the key words are tension and stretching. Tension meaning overcontraction or overstretching. And with the stretching, I'm talking about just a quick stretch. All right? I know it's very similar, but as we go through the course, it will start to make more and more sense. All right. I think we did another handout here, folks. Let's see. Oh, there we go. Fear not. It will come together. You can look at the senior class and know that people do pass. All right? So if you're a little bit swamped right now, I want you to stick around during break and talk to me. Let me know where you're swamped at.